Well then, that would be why you don't try to change things. You just leave shit the way it is. Yes, change is not always a good thing, despite what Hussein Obama, the Messiah, the first affirmative action president and the second coming of Jesus Christ, may have told you. Speaking of change, I had to move my clock forward an hour. God damn it, this fucking daylight saving shit is the dumbest shit on the fucking planet Earth. Why? Let's just record, fuck it. This was just a sound check, but everything looks fine. After I flipped a few settings and almost blew shit up. So here we are.
You can scream and shout with all your might.
Oh, and you can scream, shout, whine, cry, snivel, piss, moan, look for a safe space. You can shove your opinions up your ass, that way the Trump and Fuhrer's cock has something to keep it company.
Either you are wrong, or I am right.
Don't forget, my friends and my enemies, the third and the most likely possibility, you are wrong and I am right. It is I, Great One himself, founder of the Cynical Libertarian Society, here on a Sunday morning, 10:30, really 9:30 because of the stupid time change. This is Stating the Obvious podcast. It's the weapons platform from which I launch the cruise missile of my intellect, that homes in on and destroys stupid fucking statist snowflakes around the world. Oh, the snowflakes. Snowflakes. Yes, I do have a martini. It really, technically, it's only 9:30 according to my clock right now, despite what the clock on the wall says. I do have a martini. I am the Great One himself, founder of the Cynical Libertarian Society. We are here in the People's Republic of Colorado, here at the palatial recording studios of the Cynical Libertarian Society. On the other side of the glass, lovely and adorable Randy doing the sound engineering thing. I'm drinking the martini. I've already mentioned that. Still waking up, warming up a little bit, and now trying to remember what I did with my notes. Today is the 12th of March, in the year of our Lord, the Trump and Fuhrer, 2017. There they are. Let me try not to break anything in the process of... If I can not knock over the microphone stand, that is going to be a fucking excellent way to start this podcast. All right, I did it. Managed to pull that off. That's what she said. Oh, I will have... I don't know when it's coming out. Let's see, what's today? Sunday? And, God, it's windy outside. No, it's not a fart joke. Let's see, so this is Monday's podcast, right? Okay. I don't know when it's coming out, but I will be having... I did another guest podcast over on the Clary podcast. Technically, I didn't really do it. Adam Piggott did it. And I got Adam and Aaron. I keep getting them mixed up. Aaron asked Adam to sit in on the podcast because Aaron is, quote-unquote, writing a book, which apparently is what the kids call it nowadays when you, I don't know, go to the Netherlands and visit brothels or something. I don't know what Clary's really doing, but he claims he's writing a book, which I find hard to believe because he hasn't written any books before. But, oh wait, I'm sorry, that's not Aaron that doesn't do anything. That's Davis Arini who doesn't get off his ass and do anything. Anyway, Adam Piggott was invited to sit in on the Clary podcast, and Adam asked me if I wanted to co-host with him. So we did a podcast together using FiendPhone, which presented at FiendPhone.com, FeenPhone, FiendPhone.com. It's a app that was commissioned. Michael W. Dean got a programmer to put that application together specifically for the purpose of doing voice over IP and having something better than Skype that has really good sound quality and is sort of designed for professional level podcasting and radio. Michael uses this with his radio show, Freedom Fiends, which is on the real life radio, not fake radio. And there were a few recording challenges because I couldn't really figure out how to get the output and all that stuff. I'm not going to go into technical details right now. But anyhow, so it was a nice little adventure. It was the first time I had actually used Fiend Phone to try to record a podcast, and we suffered through it. And I had a Sean moment there. Sean, the engineer from, audio engineer from, what's the name of the podcast? World's the Biggest Problem in the World podcast, which I don't think is actually publishing anymore. I think Maddox and Dick Masterson wrapped it up. But anyhow, there was an episode where Sean, the audio engineer, accidentally deleted the podcast episode after it had been recorded and didn't have a backup, so they had to re-record the episode. They gave him shit about that all the fucking time afterwards. And so there was like a Sean moment over here where after I had recorded the podcast, because I had to record Adam's feed separate from my feed. So my feed was recorded on one computer and Adam's feed was recorded on the other computer, both of them in Audacity. And somehow or another, after I closed Audacity, and I swear to fucking God who doesn't exist, there is no invisible man in the sky, but if there was an invisible man in the sky, I would swear unto him. Wouldn't it be cool if God was a woman? So there's this woman up in the sky, right? And that way, when you look up to the heavens, you'd be looking up her dress. Just, oh God, but what if she was really like fat and had hairy legs? Anyway, closed Audacity, went back to open the Audacity file of my feed, and there was no Audacity file to be found. I know I saved it. I know I fucking saved it. I saw the little dialogue, you know, saving progress, and the little status bar goes across. What the fuck? And I searched and searched and searched all over the computer, and like nothing had been deleted. I'm like, what in the hell is going on? Fortunately, so here's a little pro tip for you guys. If you're podcasting and you're doing something like if this podcast right here crashes and burns, right? It's not a big fucking deal. It's just me standing here running my mouth. We can re-record this. When we're done, we go back, we listen to the file, it's fucked up, or if the file gets lost. It's really not crisis level bullshit. But if you're doing a podcast with somebody on the other side of the planet, Adam Piggott lives in Australia currently. He's actually moving back to Italy sometime in the next 6 months-ish. But when you've just spent 2 hours, because it is a two-hour podcast, it'll be on the Clary Podcast probably this coming week. I don't know exactly where. I'll let you guys, don't worry, I'll let you know. My ego will make sure that I let all of my listeners, all three of you, know when I am on the Clary Podcast. Possibly for the last time, because this might be the time Aaron bans me from ever being on his podcast again. Who knows? What was I talking about? Oh yes, not fucking up podcasting. So when you're doing an important podcast, such as a two-hour podcast with somebody on the other side of the planet, you want to make sure you back shit up. So we finished recording. We had the two Audacities running. And I stopped recording on both feeds. And the first thing I did was save the two Audacity files, which still doesn't explain why in the fuck I didn't have an Audacity file for my feed. The second thing I did is I immediately exported both feeds as a WAV file. And this is what you should do, because this is what saved my ass. I couldn't find the Audacity file for my feed, but I had the exported WAV file. The WAV file is just as good. I mean, the Audacity file might be slightly better, but ultimately, the WAV file is just as good as the Audacity file. So if you're doing an important podcast, if you absolutely can't afford to lose the fucking thing, soon as you're done, you stop recording. First thing you do is save the file. Second thing you do is export it as a WAV to a safe location. All right, it's enough podcast technical shit. Maybe sometime in the future I'll talk about Fiend Phone. Once I figure out Fiend Phone a little bit better. There's got to be a better, in theory. So yeah, there's got to be a better way. There's always got to be a better way. It's called anarchy. In theory, there's got to be a better way to get the feed out of FiendPhone. And so anyhow, I'm going to fuck with that. And maybe sometime in the future, I'll do a little tutorial video on that. Also, setting up for people to call in, because the documentation over at fiendphone.com is pretty good, except for in a couple of places. So maybe I'll do a little tutorial for normal people on how to set this thing up. All right, now that I have all these notes here, moving the fuck on. We're not going to talk about The Internet Is Not the Answer by Andrew Keen today because I'm still not finished with that. And fuck, the things I want to talk about on that topic just keep getting longer. I got this other pile of notes here that I really want to get through because this pile of notes is getting longer. And then, as I said, I finished the book ADHD Nation, which is absolutely fascinating, and I got to talk about that. So that's coming. All right, here we go. You see if I can reduce tangenting. Let me see if I can focus. Deep breath. Do a little Tai Chi. Do a little chai tea. I don't actually like chai tea. I don't know what the big deal is on chai tea. I mean, it's chai tea. I'm like, chai is actually, in my opinion, chai is actually kind of gross. All right, chai tea has nothing to do with Tai Chi or these stories. All right, stories. Oh, god damn it. I didn't do that. Well, fuck it. All right, hang on. Let me type this shit into Google real quick. Rant, have you heard? Not you guys. Oh, yes! Wait, what is this? Oh, this is one day. I don't give a fuck about one day. So it hasn't been around. Snapchat, it went public. I'm looking at the stock right now. 22. Oh, I mean, it hasn't really bombed or anything. I still don't understand how Snapchat can be worth supposedly $10 million. Don't get it at all. All right, this is not focusing, this is tangenting, this is not podcasting, this is me rambling and having a good time. Here we go. Let the stories begin. As soon as I take a drink of martini. Men need to locate their fucking ball sacks. So here is a man needing to locate his ball sack story. All right. This guy I know, he has a pool table. He has a sister. Sister has a kid. The guy, we'll call him Bob, we'll call his sister Alice. Bob is going to give the pool table to Alice, his sister's son, for Christmas. Sounds good so far, right? Yeah, I mean, the kid is like 12, 13, 14? I've never met the kid personally. I want to say he's, let's say 13, give or take a year. Alice says unto Bob, Bob, don't give my son a pool table for Christmas because that might outshadow the gifts I'm giving him. And Bob, being unable to locate his ball sack at the time, or actually for much of the rest of his life, says unto Alice, okay, Alice, I will not give your son a pool table for Christmas because I don't want to be a cool uncle. He didn't say the cool uncle part, I imagine. Guys, look. This is the whole, oh, we have to defer to the vagina. Men, listen to me. Okay, wait, if you're a man, you already know this. Okay, boys, B-O-Y-S, boys. When your sister tells you, don't give my son a pool table because it might outshadow the gifts I'm going to give my son for Christmas, that is not your fucking problem. You give the kid the fucking pool table. You find your ball sack. You be the cool uncle. You don't worry. Because your sister's got feelings. Well, she has a vagina. Whoa, hold on. I thought women were strong and independent and could do anything a man can do and do it better. Right, but no, you don't want to outshadow the presents she's going to give her son for Christmas. So no, you don't give him the pool table, because you're such a good beta male. No, goddammit, you give your fucking nephew, is that a nephew? Uncle, nephew, is that how it works? Fucking. You give your nephew the coolest fucking present you want to give your fucking nephew, and if your sister doesn't like it, your sister can go fuck herself. Okay, find your goddamn ball sack, man. Boys, excuse me, if you have your ball sack, you're already a man. Find your fucking ball sacks. Give your goddamn nephew or your niece the coolest fucking present. Now, don't give them things that require extensive maintenance. For example, by that, I don't mean motorcycles. Yes, give your 14-year-old nephew a motorcycle and watch your sister freak the fuck out and laugh at her. Do not give your nieces and nephews horses. Okay, no. 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 Horses are off limits, as are any other kind of animal, but especially horses, especially to girls. I'm going to give my niece a horsey! Yes, and women who own horses are the most mentally, well, second most mentally deranged women on the planet. Women with rescue dogs. Okay, the most mentally are women with rescue dogs and horses. That's not a red flag. That's like a nuclear explosion. You don't go anywhere fucking close to that one. So I would say rescue horses. Oh God, there actually is such a thing. Okay, worst, biggest red flag, rescue horses and rescue dogs. Yeah, right offhand, I cannot think of anything that would be a greater indicator of insanity in a woman. I'm talking about like, okay, if you've got, I can marry a woman who majored in feminist theory and ethnic studies, or marry a woman who has a rescue horse and rescue dogs, go with the feminist studies major because she will be more sane. Next level would of course be horses and rescue dogs. I would say that is it. It's toss up. Is it which is worse, to have a horse or to have rescue dogs? Because a woman with a horse is going to have more financial. Well. All right, anyway, it's irrelevant. We're moving on. This has nothing to do with growing your ball sack and giving your nephew a fucking pool table for Christmas. Okay, give your nephew a fucking pool table for Christmas and stop being a goddamn bitch. Okay, speaking of bitches, I have heard this said, or variations of this said, by assorted people trying to pass themselves off as comedians or social commentators, or just simply as human beings. And they're all women, and they love to make this comment, I am Trump's worst nightmare. You know, I'm a Hispanic lesbian, and I'm Donald Trump's worst nightmare. I'm a gender fluid black woman. Wait, if you're gender fluid, could you be? I'm a gender fluid person of color. I'm Donald Trump's worst nightmare. People. And I am using the term people very loosely. People. You are not Donald Trump's worst nightmare. Donald Trump does not know that you exist. Donald Trump doesn't care that you exist. Donald Trump has something you don't have. I'm not talking about winning the presidency of the United States. I'm talking about a life. Okay? all of this, I'm Donald Trump's worst nightmare. This is yet one more manifestation. It's the same thing as the Billion Bimbo Bitch March. It's the same thing as the Day Without Women. It's the same thing as wearing the safety pins. It's the same thing as going on YouTube and screaming about this can't be happening and somebody better fix this and you're about to kill yourself, okay? All that's happening here is that this is one more example. Every time you hear a female-ish sort of thing, because some of them are very questionable, but I personally have not encountered anything identifiable as a male saying, I am Donald Trump's worst nightmare. It's all women, or women-ish, or female-ish, or men pretending to be women, or something like that. In every case, once again, this is another attempt to get Donald Trump to notice them in order to get Donald Trump to fertilize their egg sales. Okay? This is just females wanting the alpha sperm. I'm Donald Trump's worst nightmare is the same thing as going, Donald, I'm over here, look at me, Donald, look at me, I'm over here, Donald Trump, I'm over here, Donald Trump, I'm over here, please look at me, I have egg cells, I have egg cells, your sperm, look at me over here, I'm Donald Trump, I'm over here, look at me. That's all it is. It's just you wanting Donald Trump's alpha male sperm to shoot inside of your vagina and fertilize your eggs so you can make little alpha babies. It's only your biology. You are not Donald Trump's worst nightmare. Donald Trump does not give a fuck about you. You do not matter. You are lower than whale shit. You are a fucking speck in the infinity of the cosmos. And you, because your biology is pushing you in that direction, and you don't recognize this because you don't think biology is real, like global warming, you think biology is a social construct created by the patriarchy to oppress you, you don't recognize all of this, look at me, I'm Donald Trump's worst nightmare, is simply you trying to get his attention so that he will put sperm cells in your little cooch. So just please shut the fuck up. You are not Donald Trump's worst nightmare. You're just a dumb bitch. Reading the ADHD book, I had a thought. Sometimes I do that, have thoughts. Usually they involve the CSU women's volleyball team being naked and, you know, rubbing themselves all over my body. But we won't go there today. Aren't you glad you came here for this intellectual discussion?
Hang on a minute. The clocks are still jacked up.
Alright, there it goes. I'm more or less synchronized with the church clock down the street, which I can hear coming through the window. The fuck was I talking about? Oh yeah, the CSU women's volleyball team. Okay, before that. Oh yeah, children. Ha! ADHD, kids. So I'm reading the ADHD book, and I'm contemplating all of this stuff. And in theory, I'll talk about this more when I talk about the book, but I might forget. That's what I put on my notes. And I'm looking at something else, and it's talking about how, you know, young people are angry and they change, blah, 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 blah. And here's the thought that came to me. I know, blah, 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 that was really fucking philosophical and shit. Right now, women, especially white women in North America, as I have pointed out before, are the most spoiled animals on the planet Earth. I mean, they have managed to create a society with the help of the extensive amount of beta males that have proliferated a society in which they are denied almost nothing. The last thing they want to happen is for all of this female privilege they have to be taken away from them. Now, the politicians, they're not going to take away any of this stuff. The old people aren't going to take away this because old people are invested in the system as it is. Okay? You don't really see 70-year-old people going around saying, yeah, we should shut down the Social Security system. Okay? They're invested in that. The people who want to shut down the Social Security system, for the most part, are young people. Because when you're younger, you're not invested in that system. So as a femistatist in the United States of America, you have, depending on how old you have helped to create or you have come into this system in which women are the center of the cosmos. You can get your free this and your free that and your WIC and your welfare. And anytime a man looks at you, you can talk about rape. And everything in society is geared towards making sure that you never experience discomfort. The greatest threat to this system is, of course, a sufficient number of Muslim immigrants who will take these rights away from you. But because you're a femistatist, you're not smart enough to know that, because when you look at Muslims, all you see is people who hate white men and will vote Democrat. And that's why I want more Muslims to come to the United States. I want them to amass sufficient numbers to have political power, and because they will take the privileges away from women, something that heterosexual white men in the United States have lost the ability to do. Because if we could control our own women, which we obviously can't, we wouldn't be where we are today. So that's the real threat, the biggest threat to women, but women don't see that. Excuse me, femistatists don't see that. The threat, which is obvious to femistatists, is the threat of youth. Young people show up. Young people, and we all know this is true, we were all young at one time. Young people think they know everything. I know I did. Young people want to change. We're going to change things. And young people, especially now with so many of them being unemployed and lazy and everything else, of course, then again, some of you are playing video games and everything. But the point is, young people, broadly speaking, across the society, young people are the ones who have the time, the energy, the motivation to change society. Okay, again, 70-year-old people are not going to try to reform Social Security. 70-year-old people, they're invested in that. They're not giving up Social Security. They want it exactly like it is, other than the part where they get more money every year, right? 70-year-old people, not going to change Social Security. If anybody in our society is going to push for and achieve change in Social Security, this is our example for now, it's going to be young people, because they're the ones who are not invested in it yet. And they're the ones who have the most reason to see things being different. So in a society, most likely, not always, most likely, any sort of serious societal change, modification, you know, policy changes, giant strides forward or backwards or sideways, are going to be spearheaded, or at least require, be spearheaded by young people, or at least require a significant amount of buy-in from young people. So you're a femistatist, you're 45 years old, you're living in North America right now, the entire planet is kissing your ass, even though you're the most environmentally destructive animal on the planet Earth. What is the biggest threat to the way things are now being taken away from you? You know, you may think that you're being told, you know, the biggest threat to your fucking right to a free abortion is those evil Republicans. Well, it's really not, because evil Republicans don't give a shit one way or the other. For evil Republicans, they've got their money and their power and their mansions. And believe it or not, just like you are not Donald Trump's worst nightmare, the evil Republicans really aren't. I mean, okay, there's a couple of exceptions. Yes, I know that. But I'm talking about 97% of evil Republican politicians are not laying awake at night trying to figure out how they can take away your free abortion. Most of them don't really give a shit. Most Republicans, if they're lying awake at night, are trying to figure out which of their girlfriends they're going to fuck the next day without their wife knowing about it, or should they get a new gay lover, or is the one they've got, is he still okay at sucking dick? Right? They're not thinking about your cooch. I know that, again, see, this is the thing. You femistatists, you think the entire fucking cosmos revolves around your fucking cooch. It doesn't. It really doesn't. Your cooch is not the center of the cosmos. Great one. Is there a point to all this? Yes, I'm getting there. The biggest threat to femistatism, the biggest threat to women, you know, being able to accuse a man of rape for looking at them, the biggest threat to women receiving outlandish alimony payments, the biggest threat to women being able to divorce rape men, the biggest threat to affirmative action giving women jobs, all this, is the biggest threat to femistatism is young people, especially young men, who now with the internet, the manosphere, coming into the world, they can learn. They can read about this stuff. They can become exposed to the MGTO concept. They can be exposed to the manosphere. They can read The Chateau. They can read Rollo Thomasy. They can read Aaron Clary. They can read Adam Piggott. They can listen to me screaming and yelling and calling women cunts. They can fantasize about having sex with the CSU women's volleyball team. In fact, I encourage that. Actually, no, those are my girls. Stay the fuck away from my chicks. And if there is going to be anything in our society, other than a sufficient number of Muslim immigrants, that is going to challenge the supremacy of women and challenge the prime directive of North American society, which is that no white woman must ever experience discomfort. If anything is going to challenge that, it is going to be young men. And thus, I believe, here's my thesis, doesn't matter what I believe, this is my thesis. My thesis is that this fear of young men is one of the reasons why so many mothers are so anxious to put their male children on ADHD medication and dumb them down. Because you need the youth. You got to have the youth because you've got to have somebody to pay taxes when you're old, right? Women need children to support them when they're old. Remember, that's the purpose. Okay, let's see if I can do this briefly. Remember, from a woman's perspective, here's how women, this is called biology, this is evolution, this is not evil, this is biology. Here's how women view men. When a woman is young, there is a man, the father. The father is there to protect her and provide for her. Then she finds a mate, a husband, whatever you want to call it. The woman has her husband, her boyfriend, her mate, her live-in, whatever. He is there to provide for her and to protect her. Nowadays, of course, the government does that job. Then when he dies, you know, he dies off fighting the saber-toothed cat or something like that. That's why women have male children. Now, the husband, the mate, the live-in, whatever you call it, that's gone. The woman has the male child, and the purpose of a male child is to provide for his mother. Men are viewed by women as a mechanism for acquiring provisions and protection. That's it. That is our purpose to them from an evolutionary biological viewpoint. And remember, from our perspective, what are they there for? They're there to suck our dicks and make babies. Emphasis on the making baby part, okay? So again, biology goes both ways. I'm not saying that men are not biologically driven to squirt some cum inside a woman. So she's like, yes, we have similar flaws. But of course, women are the ones, we can be very honest about this. I think we can all be very honest. I mean, you hear the people in the manosphere talking about, yeah, the only reason we need women is to make babies. And if we can figure out how to make babies in test tubes, we won't need women anymore. I'm not entirely sure I agree with that. But see, the point is, men look at that and they're like, right, yeah, that really, biologically speaking, that's really all we need women for. It really is. And we can be honest about it. Women don't have that ability because women... All right, I'm tangenting. Because women only have two compartments in their brain. One is for shopping and the other one they don't use, right? So women, especially femistatist, still need to make babies because they will need people to pay taxes so they can have Social Security. They'll need people to take care of them when they're old and change their diapers and all this other stuff. But they don't want these children, especially the male children. You don't want your male children to be uppity, because if they're uppity, the male children might take away some of your privileges. Thus, you dope your male children up and you keep them dumb. You don't want your kids to rock the boat when you're the person in the boat. Snapchat. I'm actually making progress. It's kind of scary. Normally, I never make this much progress on the podcast. Did that. Snapchat. Here's my thesis. Once again, I have a thesis for which there is no discernible, practical, empirical evidence. Here's my thesis on Snapchat. Think about this. So you're the guy, because it couldn't have possibly been a woman, because founding a company involves work. You're the guy who founded Snapchat. So you come up with this idea and you got Snapchat. Snapchat's running. So Snapchat doesn't cost any money. I don't know. I don't have Snapchat because I'm not a woman. Does Snapchat have advertising in it? I don't know. But so you have Snapchat. You have to have all these computers and shit to run it. I'm assuming, right? Is it centralized? I don't know if it's centralized. Or is everything completely cloud-based? I should research this a little bit. Here's the point. Somehow or another, even if Snapchat requires nothing but the one guy writing the code and nothing else has to happen, you still got to get some money out of this somehow. I mean, that's the whole point. So I'm looking at Snapchat, and people are, well, Snapchat's worth $10 million, or is it $10 billion? Whatever the fuck it was, somebody claimed. Who cares? How do you get anything out of Snapchat if you're the guy who owns Snapchat? Here's my thesis. Because you guys all probably know more about this than I do. Snapchat, right? You take a picture, it sends, after a while it deletes. Except that my understanding from things I've read on the internet, therefore they must be true, is that it doesn't really delete. It just gets renamed. Now, regardless of whether it does or doesn't, that's actually not even relevant. Here's my theory. Somewhere on the planet Earth, there's a server. This server has terabytes of storage on it. And all the Snapchat accounts are linked in the code back to the server. So every time a Snapchat message gets sent, that photo is stored on this server along with the username, the user's information, however much you have to put in order to be on Snapchat. Because again, I don't know. I don't have Snapchat. Because when I take my hand, right? This is my hand right here. I'm waving it in front of the microphone. See, that's my hand. When I take my hand, I put it down between my legs. It's, what's that? Yep. Oh, there's one. Yeah. Kind of bouncy and round. What's this? Yep, two. Yes, I do have a ball sack. Therefore, I do not have Snapchat. My thesis is that every photo, along with the information about the user's account, and all the information Snapchat has on each user is all being stored on a server. And 25 years from now, when George or Susie or Adam or Yannette run for, say, political office, the Snapchat guy will go through the photos and go, oh, here's a picture of Sally, 16 years old, sending a naked picture of herself out on Snapchat with a cucumber stuck up her ass. I think, it doesn't matter what I think, it's like my feels, has nothing to do with reality. My thesis, for which I have no evidence, is that Snapchat is the most brilliant blackmail machine that has ever been created. Time will tell. Only time will tell if there's truth to this. Because you've lulled the users into this false sense of security that, oh, what I send on Snapchat, it's there and then it vanishes. Because yes, things on the internet just vanish. Maybe Snapchat's not technically on the internet. I don't know. But the point is, it's digital. And you don't know what's in the code. And when you send that picture out, you don't know where it's going. And I had this conversation with some anxious the other day. I'm building a website and I want to be able to protect my pictures so people can't like save them or screenshot them. And I'm like, you know that's impossible, right? Well, no, you can get this thing and it'll prevent people from screenshot. I'm like, oh, bullshit. Bullshit. Guys, Google cannot stop me from screenshotting shit that they try to. Okay, if you, someone who knows what they're doing with a fucking computer, no. There is no sky. No. It cannot. So this idea that you send your Snapchat and then it vanishes and it can never be reproduced? No. The idea that you're, and I don't even know, can you screenshot them? Does Snapchat claim to have some sort of screenshot prevention? No. Uh-uh. No. Greatest blackmail machine ever invented. Speaking of fucking, there is a movie. I need to watch this movie again. There is a movie. It is an old movie. It's called Revenge of the Nerds. It's one of my favorite movies, although I have not seen it in years. And it could be one of those moments where you liked a movie so much, and then you go back and you watch it again, you're like, oh, shit, that really wasn't that good. But I have watched Revenge of the Nerds enough times that I think it's immune from that. I need to put that on my list to watch Revenge of the Nerds sometime soon. Where's my list? Is that my list? Hey, that is my list. That is a list of girls I want to do on it, so that's my list. Revenge of Nerds. In Revenge of the Nerds, one of the nerd characters at one point fucks one of the cheerleader characters, but it's a long story. I'm not getting it. But anyhow, so the cheerleader, because of it's a masquerade, paper faces on parade, and so the cheerleader girl thinks that the nerd is actually one of the jocks, and the nerd goes down and eats the cheerleader girl's pussy. And he comes back up, and now at this point she can see he's not the jock, he's just the nerd. And she's like, oh my God, that was the best. How exactly? But she didn't fuck her man. She said, that was the best ever. How can you nerds be so good at sex? And the nerd says, well, all jocks ever think about is sports, and all nerds ever think about is sex. And I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about, you know, this is part of why, I've said this before, I'll say it again in the future, a lot of these feminist and femistatist and social justice warrior snowflake types, one of the reasons they're so mentally damaged and so fucked up is because they've just never had a good fucking. right? You got these little feminist chicks with their hairy armpits, and dude, if some guy would just spank the shit out of them and fuck them really good, they would shave their armpits, they'd lose some weight, they'd pull the piercings out. And the reason for one of the reasons for all of this discrepancy is because, of course, who are social justice warriors fucking? Well, they're fucking other social justice warriors. But all social justice warriors ever think about is social justice. They don't ever really think about fucking. So what we need is we need some people who spend all their time thinking about fucking. And we need to go out and get social justice warriors. And yeah, you know, take a garden hose and hose them off and then clip the hair off their legs and their armpits. And just fuck the shit out of them. And maybe we could convert some of them. Yes, you should definitely wear two condoms if you're going to do this, because you don't know what the social justice warriors may have. Don't want to do this. Oh, I want to do this. Randy, how are we on time? Okay, I can definitely do that. I already bitched about Generation Z. I did that, right? Yes, I can scratch that off. Okay. Ooh, it's going to be so close. So close. All right. One of the things I do in my life for money in... Oh, shit. One of the things... Not you guys. I'm looking at someone else. God damn it. It's not as much time as I thought. Sorry. One of the things I do in my life for money, in addition to attempting to get college girls to pay me to have sex with them, which has not been very successful, unfortunately, but it's still my dream... is, as long as they're not feminist majors, feminist studies majors. Greetings! How's everybody doing? All right, I'm focused now. Focusing. Just a reminder, I'm not doing this podcast for you. This is just me having a good time. It really is. So just fucking deal with it. That's how I've done this for 12 fucking years. Yeah, I was listening to an episode of Freedom Fiends lately, and Michael W. Dean was talking about how there are people who will send him like comments directly or on the via commenting sections or whatever, and talking about, well, you know, you should try doing this, or you should do things this way. And Michael just said, he says, guys, don't send me your comments, because I've been doing this for years and I'm not going to change anything I do based on comments. I'm not interested. I don't care about your comments. I'm doing what I'm doing. And if you don't like that, you can leave. I'm paraphrasing heavily, but that was his sentiment. And I'm right there with him. I'm doing this because I enjoy it. And yeah, don't send me your fucking comments about how if I said the word cunt less, or if I was more respectful to women, or if I didn't laugh in the microphone so much, or, you know, if I fucking sucked your mom's dick, or whatever the fuck it is that they would... No, you know what? Take your fucking opinions about the cast and go fuck yourself. All right, anyway, that was just me tangenting. Here we go. Deep breath. Gonna focus again. One of the things I do for money is not podcasting, because I don't get any money for this. I only get fucking therapy and enjoyment and pleasure from it. One of the things I do for money, in addition to your mom, is I do website work for people. And so I'm talking to some people that I know at a non-profit. And they're looking for somebody to take care of their website for them. And I think they're a little bit delusional in a couple of ways, but that's neither here nor there. And she, it's a woman, of course, it's a nonprofit. Gee, who works at nonprofits? Oh yeah, women do. She's asking me about what I can provide and services and yada, 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 and my rates and all this other stuff. So I've given her the lowdown. We're talking, blah, blah, blah. And she says unto me, so are those your nonprofit rates? And I said to her, no, I don't have nonprofit rates, because if I don't make a profit, I can't pay my bills. She was not real happy about this, and I honestly don't give a shit. I am so fucking sick of nonprofits. Not that I haven't been sick of this for years. But again, it's like, so, okay, you expect me to charge your nonprofit organization less money for my services because you're a nonprofit organization. Point number one, which I and many other people have made, just because you can't make a profit doesn't mean I can't make a profit, okay? Your inability to make a profit is not my fucking problem. That's your problem. But here's another thing I thought of. Whenever you've got, like, so this dumb bitch who's working for this nonprofit, it's not like she's working for free. And had I thought about it at the time, my question to her should have been, well, do you have nonprofit rates? Like, are you working here for less than minimum wage? Are you not making a profit here? Do you work here and then have another job where you actually make your money? Just the nonprofit shit. And then again, well, I work at a nonprofit. Well, nobody cares, honey. Okay, your nonprofit is essentially, it's an admission of failure. When you work for a nonprofit, hi, we have this organization and we do this stuff, but we can't even make a profit because nobody, and but well, that's not really what it means. It just means we're not trying to make a profit. Well, why aren't you trying to make a profit? I mean, if you make a profit, you can use the profit to buy things and hire people to further your fucking goals. And in a way, that argument is sort of splitting hair, and in a way it's not. But just the next level of aggravation for me with these nonprofits is the idea that when people, businesses who do have to make profits, who do have to pay their employees or do have to pay their bills if it's an individual, you know, this idea that, oh, we're supposed to have a reduced rate for you because you're a nonprofit, because you've made this choice to work in this field where you're completely dependent upon government subsidies. And this is the hilarious part. I'm supposed to have a nonprofit rate, okay? But I have to pay the taxes that are then used to give this organization the money this organization uses to operate. Okay, it's a nonprofit. They don't have any money. The money they get comes from the government, which comes from my tax money. And then they want me to give them a reduced price for my services because they're a nonprofit. Like, no, you know what? The fact that you are completely dependent on my tax money for your survival, not only should I not give you a lower price, I should, in fact, and you know what? In the future, I'm going to charge nonprofits extra. I have just made that decision right here, right now. I am going to have a nonprofit rate. I am going to make it higher than my normal rate. And that's what it's like to always be right, except for that one time when I said Hillary Clinton would be the next president of the United States.